Tweet at Today SOR.
Kieran Conway was reared in an affluent suburb of South County Dublin and educated at Blackrock College and then University College Dublin. His new book, Southside Provisional, charts his personal journey from teenage middle-class Anglophile to committed IRA activist. He's with me now in studio. Kieran Conway, thank you very much indeed for coming in. You're now, of course, practicing as a solicitor in Dublin. We'll come back to that. But you begin the book saying that there was nothing in my past to suggest that I might one day join the IRA. So how did it come about?
Well, my parents both came from Fine Gael backgrounds. My father was from a largish farm in Limerick. My mother was her father was a shop owner and barkeeper. I had a very normal upbringing in South Dublin. Went to Blackrock College. Normal teenage interests in football, rugby, English pop music. We all thought at the time England was a great place. Ireland was very grey, dismal, and old-fashioned. And I went to UCD in 1968. That was just after the student revolutions in, the student revolts in Berlin, Paris, to a lesser extent, London.
Danny the Red and all that.
Yeah, things were also hotting up in the north. I took part in the various protests in UCD that year, but I didn't join anything. I just observed. And then in 69, the North kicked off, and when I came back to college, I decided to join the Republican Club, the then student branch of what was then official Sinn Féin. So I did so. Within a few months, I had acquired very, very solid convictions, and I felt that I should follow the logic of those, and I should join the IRA. And I tried to do so. It took me 9 months to join. I tried to join the official IRA in Dublin, and I was told that my efforts to join were indications of my immature adventurism and that the IRA was not for the likes of middle-class lads like me. They wanted us to get our degrees and then we would be assisted to get jobs in the media, trade unions and the public service. So that June I dropped out of college. And I went north to try to join the IRA, got involved in riots in Divitt's Flats after the killing by the British Army of Donnie O'Hagan. And I met some people with provisional contacts there. And eventually I got a couple of interviews. And I was supposed to join the famous D Company in the Lower Falls. But at the last moment it fell through. Word came from Dublin that I should go back there and join the queue.
So where were you at in your studies, or were you anywhere with the books at this stage?
No, I did 2 years of law and I failed the second year exams, and at that stage I dropped out. I declined to repeat them.
And I suspect much to the disappointment
absolutely,
of your family and people like that. And for instance, in the family home and around the dinner or the tea table, was there much discussion about what was going on in Northern Ireland at that stage?
No, not at all. No.
So did it come as a complete surprise to your parents whenever it emerged that you were involved in this?
Well, my parents knew. They were aware when I joined the Republican Club, and my father would come in to see how I was doing now and again. He'd find me reading James Connolly or Karl Marx or an anarchist writer, and he would say, James Connolly isn't going to get you your exams.
So then you eventually got into the IRA, but did you have to go to London to do that?
I did, yeah. The man that gave me the bad news that that I couldn't join in Belfast, told me, he saw that I was very disappointed, and he told me that there was a backdoor way into membership by going to London where they were recruiting. They'd just been decimated over there in a police raid on a training session. So I went there immediately, and within a fortnight I was a member.
And what did that entail?
That entailed talking to the then OC there, persuading them of my bona fides, being warned of the near certainty of imprisonment or death, and some very elementary training in a Midland city in firearms and explosives.
What was your first experience of dealing with a firearm?
My first experience would have been in that Midland city where I was shown how to strip the weapon, clean it, assemble it again, and then I was taken out to some woods, and I was let fire off a couple of shots, and that was very exciting at the time.
Live ammunition?
Yes.
And were you then given the gun to use, or what happened?
No, not at all. I then went back to London. I got a job in the city, and met up with my fellow colleagues in the IRA. And after Christmas, I was sent back to Ireland for training. And that was a week-long session of explosives, firearms, and fieldcraft in the countryside at night.
How detailed was the weapons? Was the explosive training?
The explosives training was very, very detailed, and I recounted in my book. It astonishes me the clarity with which I remember every detail of it. I suppose at that age, something that you want to learn, if well taught, sticks in your mind forever.
You were taught how to make bombs?
I was, yes.
And did you ever plant any?
I say in the book that I have to be careful in what I say because there's still a risk of prosecution. Now, I don't think in the South they're interested in historic prosecutions. The minister, or ex-minister for justice, Michael McDougall, at some stage, I think after the Gerry Adams arrest, indicated that they weren't. But in the North, they certainly are, so I need to be careful of what I say. I've absolutely no doubt that actions of mine resulted in serious harm to people and worse. And I regret that. I very much regret it in view of the outcome.
How many people would you say lost their lives as a result of what you did?
I couldn't say. I simply wouldn't.
Would you be able to count them on two hands?
I prefer not to continue any further with this line of questioning. I've said as much as I feel I can in the book. As I say, they're the surest possible indication of the fact that the IRA lost the war is the fact that nobody could write an honest memoir. Do you know what I mean? Comparable to those written by people like Tom Barry, Dan Breen and Ernie O'Malley after the war.
And would you include somebody like Sean O'Callaghan in that statement?
I'm not sure that O'Callaghan's memoir is completely honest. I knew O'Callaghan. O'Callaghan also ended my journalistic career, by the way. He named me in his book as a senior IRA figure. And shortly after that, Tom Murphy from South Armagh took a case against the Sunday Times. And his case disintegrated when he was asked if he knew me. And he said he didn't. And they then called a Garda witness who gave evidence of having arrested the two of us close to the border in 1983 and detained us for questioning in relation to
him. He's an individual maybe more colloquially known as the Slab Murphy.
That's right, yeah.
And, but coming back then to your own, you came back here, you got some early training and then you went, I think, you went north.
No, first of all, I went back to England and the OC there at the time had an ambitious shooting and bombing plan. Around February, instructions came from GHQ that they wanted us to raid money, so we did bank robberies and other armed robberies, as well as intelligence gathering.
How much did you raise?
We raised a reasonable amount, nothing fantastic.
In how many robberies?
I just simply don't feel I can go into detail.
So how long were you then on active service in the UK?
I was in active service there until May. May of 71. I was back in Ireland when fellow members of my unit were arrested and subsequently charged with bank robbery. I felt that the English police were looking for me. So that meant that the IRA in Ireland were basically stuck with me. So after sending me to the Mayo Mountains for further training, and that was training with Belfast men, I was sent up to the border, and I was there for a few months.
And what about your cover at this stage? I mean, what was your story in explaining what you did?
To whom?
To anybody, members of the family. You hardly went around saying, you know, I'm a member of the IRA, by the way, and I'm pretty much full-time into this.
No, of course not. But, you know, close friends would have known, but my parents, particularly my father, didn't take my involvement very seriously. He assumed I was on the fringes of things.
And what were you living on? Were you paid a kind of a wage or a stipend?
You weren't actually paid in those days. A form of payment came in after internment when people in the North couldn't couldn't sign on anymore to compensate them for that. But I was basically just somebody that was on my keeping. I was looked after. Had enough cigarettes, food, and shelter.
And then, when you say you moved towards the border, what and into Northern Ireland? Where did that take you, and into what?
That took me the whole length of the Donegal border, and then around Leitrim into Cavan.
Doing what?
Various operations, and again, I detail as much as I can in my book, as much as I feel I safely can.
Right, do you want to give us some details?
I'm sorry to keep on appearing to
avoid that question. No, well, I suppose basically what you're saying is you do not want to incriminate yourself.
Exactly.
And I suppose that is understandable, though unsatisfactory from the point of view of, I suppose, people getting the full story. You met people and whose names would be familiar to very many. Going back to some of the older figures, pre the second split, people like Rory O'Brady,
yeah.
People like Daithí O'Connell.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave O'Connell was somebody I thought very highly of. I also...
the man who invented the car bomb.
The man who allegedly invented the car bomb, I'm not sure that that's true. I think it kind of came into being accidentally. It was a very, very obvious means of conveying large amounts of explosives. And it became necessary because it became impossible to walk with bombs into the city centre.
And he was somebody who was held in high regard, not just by you, but by many other people. But
he
suffered some reputational damage as a result of his, let's call them, extracurricular activities.
With Miss Maguire, he did, yes.
He had a romantic involvement with a woman called, was it Maria Maguire?
Maria Maguire, yes.
And this emerged after a trip abroad to buy guns.
That's right, yeah. And he lost the guns and... So that did not go down well in certain circles. But people use that against Dave. I've absolutely no idea, by the way, whether it's true or not. I mean, I never asked him, look, did you have an affair with Maria Maguire? But I think it's commonly believed.
And what about people like O'Brady then, and Sean McStiffon, then Chief of Staff?
Yeah, Sean McStiffon was a fairly severe sort of figure. Curious accent, Dublin accent, English. He was the Chief of Staff. I heard when I was in prison that Dave O'Connell declined the job at the time. I think he preferred being chairman of the Army Council than the main political strategist, political stroke military strategist. Rory O'Brady was another very, very nice man, very easy to get on with, and very friendly.
But he was president of Sinn Féin at the time.
He was, yeah, but he also had an IRA role.
What was that?
Well, I don't think he was... Do you know what I mean? He wasn't on GHQ or anything like that, but he would have attended GHQ meetings, and he was certainly on the Army Council.
And then you moved to Derry?
And then I was sent into Derry, yes, in late 71, early October.
And what about life there and your involvement and activities?
Life there was much easier than on the border. On the border you had long marches through difficult terrain, often with heavy equipment. Hours and days of waiting for things to happen, and you lived in very, very, very Spartan sort of environment, in outhouses and farmers' barns and things like that. Derry was very easy by comparison. There were targets everywhere. I knew a lot of the people from the camps. I'd taken some training camps myself in the period prior to and just after internment. So I knew a lot of them already.
Would you have described yourself at that stage, or maybe later, as a senior member of the IRA?
Absolutely not. Certainly not at that point, no. I was somebody that was attached to GHQ. I was full-time.
Obviously, the need for security, as they would have seen it, would have meant you wouldn't necessarily know everything about everybody. But how many other IRA members would you have known?
I don't know, dozens, perhaps 100. Things were pretty loose in those days.
What about Martin McGuinness? He was somebody very senior in the IRA at that time.
He was. Martin was the number two in Derry when I went in. But the OC, who would have been a guy in his late 20s, he had a job and family. And I didn't see that much of him. It was pretty clear to me that Martin was the man in charge. And everybody looked up to him, adults as well as young IRA volunteers. He was a very, very impressive individual.
Did you have much by way of personal dealings with him?
I did during that period, yes, yes. I was generally billeted with him in houses, and was in his house on many, many occasions, and liked him and respected him a great deal.
And when last did you talk to him, by the way?
I bumped into him in the street maybe 5-6 years ago. He was on his way to a radio interview, and we had a quick word. He was with Bernie, his wife, whom I also knew well, and he just asked me, was I involved? Was I doing anything?
And meaning?
Had I come back? Basically,
back to the
movement. And I said no, and that ended it.
Yeah, I think you left it twice. We'll come to that. So you ended up in jail as a result of activities in Derry.
I did, yeah. Mid-71, the British Army hit a call house that we had on the edge of the Brandywell, and I was the last out of the house. There were about a dozen people in it, and I was arrested. Unknown to me, there were one of the guys was cleaning a handgun and left parts of it there. There were also 50 pounds of jerrycanite found in the house, and I was subsequently charged and convicted.
And sentenced for how long?
I got 4 years. Sentences were pretty light at the time. It's just coming up to the truth.
Was that your only time in jail?
No. Well, I also got a 3-year sentence for possession of 2 handguns in Crumlin Road Prison, which were intended to be used in an escape. And I was fortunate that I faced, fortunate in retrospect, that I faced Judge McGonigal. Judge McGonigal had a fearsome sentencing record, but he treated my refusal to recognise his court as the act of an impotent pup and gave me only 3 years. I should have got about 10 for that.
In other words, he was allowing for the exuberance of youth. Is that the suggestion?
I suppose so, yeah. I think he may have known that I had been a law student and also that I was from the South. Anyway, he dealt with me very gently.
You left the IRA, was it in 1975?
Yeah.
Why?
I left the IRA against a background of increasing dysfunction within the organisation. Dave O'Connell had been arrested. Kevin Mallam was in jail. A lot of the figures that I would have admired were simply not about. In the North, the IRA had got involved in tit-for-tat killings with loyalists, which was absolutely contrary to Republican policy. And it was also politically stupid because it gave the British the opportunity to portray the whole thing as a sectarian clash between Protestants and Catholics.
And was there something about sectarian killings that you found... something that you despised?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I completely disagreed with him.
And is that primarily the reason you left then?
No. Then there was a triggering event. I had a row with Seamus Toomey. At the time, there was an IRA unit that was out of control. Eddie Galler and Marion Coyle, who subsequently, just 2 or 3 days after I actually left the IRA, kidnapped Mr. Herriman down in Limerick. That was a triggering event because at the time, Seamus Toomey, the Chief of Staff, had instructed me to have them disarmed and basically brought before him to stop whatever they had in mind. And myself and my unit were trying to do this. And we raided a couple of houses in the Midlands. We were armed and... We didn't catch them, although we missed them narrowly on one occasion. And then Toomey had a go with me over the raids. And at the time, the people we were looking for were threatening us. They threatened to shoot us. And I was very unhappy that he wasn't backing me in executing his orders. And I told him he could stick his job.
And was there any difficulty about walking away?
None at all. I wrote out a resignation for him, and when he saw it, he said, look, I don't want you to leave the IRA, I just want you to resign your job, which was ridiculous because he could have, taken the job away from me at any time. But I said, no, I'm leaving, and I left, and that was it.
And what did you do then?
I went back to college and did an arts degree.
And subsequently rejoined the IRA in 1981, around the time of the hunger strikes.
That's right, the hunger strikes had a deep impact on me. I had been on the first hunger strike for political status, a successful one, in 1972, and I rejoined a few weeks before Bobby Sands died. I bumped into an old friend from Longcash in Dublin, and he asked me would I come back, and I said I would.
And that lasted then, that second period of membership, for how long?
That lasted till 1993. I left on the day of the Downing Street Declaration. But from 1987 on, my involvement in the IRA would have been less than it had been previously because I had been sent into Sinn Féin, so I was a dual member. I had IRA responsibilities.
Yeah, explain a bit, as an insider, that overlap between the IRA and Sinn Féin.
Well, it's very simple. IRA people are either by desire or they're instructed to go into Sinn Féin. And that's what I did.
Did the IRA or does the IRA, insofar as it may or may not exist, control Sinn Féin?
Oh, it certainly did at the time, yes, absolutely.
And it was very much a case of two sides of the same coin. When you probably read Bertie Ahern in the Sunday Independent a couple of days ago saying for Gerry Adams to deny being in the IRA would be a bit like Bertie Ahern denying he was in Fianna Fáil.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, good analogy.
You think that was a fair comment?
Oh, yeah.
What about where it all ended up? Not just the Downing Street Declaration with John Major and Albert Reynolds, but the peace process, the Good Friday Agreement. Do you think that was a good outcome?
I don't. I don't think it certainly wasn't the outcome that people died for and the people killed people for. So the outcome is a disappointment to me. But it is two decades on, and I mean, my bitterness has abated somewhat.
Did you think, I mean, why did you leave on the day of the Downing Street Declaration?
I left on the day of the Downing Street Declaration because I was down the Unfublocked office with a lot of other people watching it. We expected certain things to be said. We expected, in particular, some sort of indication of British interest in leaving Ireland. That didn't happen. Then a call came through from Belfast and the caller, who was Gerry Adams, said that it was people should settle down. That it was that they could work with it, and I thought, right, the gloom in the room evaporated, and I thought, right, I'm off. I went home.
And you subsequently qualified as a solicitor. You now practice as a solicitor in Dublin. Why did you write this book?
I wrote this book because I was coming up to my 60th birthday, and I thought I should leave some sort of record of my life. In particular, my son, who had the same sort of upbringing as myself, knew absolutely nothing about me, and I felt that he should.
Well, you could have told him. You didn't have to put it in a book.
I could have, yes, but anyway, it became a book.
Everybody regrets things they did, but does it go any much further than regret for things you did, for people who lost their lives as a result of your actions?
Yes, it does.
Are there individuals you could name who lost their lives?
There are people I think of occasionally, yes.
Whose identity is known to you?
Yeah.
Have you ever thought of writing or apologising in any way to their
families? I haven't. My feeling the whole thing was that I share corporate responsibility, if you like, for everything that occurred, and, along with everyone else.
But when you joined, you must have known that innocent people, leave aside, you know, military people, or members of the security forces, would die as a result of what you did. Did that not? Was that not a reason to deter you?
No, at the time I joined, it never crossed my mind that we might kill innocent civilians.
And what about the title of the book, Southside Provisional, From Freedom Fighter to the Four Courts?
Yes.
Freedom Fighter?
Yes, well, that's what I consider I was, yes.
And no apologies for that?
Absolutely none, no. But in view of the outcome, I mean, the outcome is the IRA has disappeared into history, having taken a position on how to achieve Irish unity, which is identical to that of the British governments that fought against for 25 years. And that is not a good outcome.
Complete failure then?
Yes, complete and utter.
The book is called Southside Provisional, From Freedom Fighter to the Four Courts. It's by Kieran Conway. It's published by the Orpen Press. Thank you very much indeed for joining us, Kieran
Thank
Conway.
Thank you, Sean.